the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, if you're retired, I have some startling statistics for you. A male age 65 can probably live to age 84. If you're a woman, you can live to age 87. Here's another one. If you are 65, you have a 1 out of 4 chance of living past 90, and 1 out of 10 chance of living to age 95. Well, what does that mean? It means you're more likely to run into higher medical expenses, and at some point, you may run into long-term care expenses, which can be quite expensive. It can range anywhere from $3,800 for in-home care to $7,700 for a private room. So we're going to discuss long-term care on the program. Today, joining me is Brian MacArthur from Bridalwood Insurance. And Brian, I just mentioned those statistics. One of the things that I think a lot of individuals heading into retirement aren't really thinking of when they retire, because you retire at age 65, you want to think, gosh, I want to do all those things I didn't get to do when I was working, I'm going to travel, but they don't think about longevity, living a long retirement life, and the cost of medical care. Let's talk about long-term care, because this is something the odds increase the older you get, and the greater the probabilities of living longer, the chances are one, if not both spouses, could end up in a long-term care facility. So let's talk about what it cost and its affordability.
Certainly, Jim. So those statistics are sobering and always a great starting point, because if somebody's not thinking about long-term care at all, just presenting these facts, hopefully at least, convinces them to allocate some thought to the topic. A few things I'd bring up is that, one, I don't know about you, but, you know, however old you are right now, however old I am right now, I don't feel much older than when I was 25. I'd imagine when I'm 72, I won't feel much older in my head. My body might convince me otherwise. So it is something worth thinking about, especially these days with the advances in healthcare. Long-term care is really not a one-foot-in-the-grave type conversation anymore. Things that used to kill us now no longer do, and rather than have life stop, often we find ourselves put in a position where we just need care. So as a starting point, one, it's worth thinking about. Number two, if we look at cost, the best starting point would be, you know, the statistics that you shared. That being said, long-term care experiences are very, very personalized. Obviously, it depends how much. Here in San Diego, the cost of long-term care would be way more than other parts of the country. So I think it's important to figure out where you think you'll probably be receiving care. One of the things I would consider, Jim, is that 80% of most long-term care experiences start off with home care. There's a lot of great facilities these days, and life is pretty darn good inside those facilities, but it's also pretty darn expensive. But 80% of long-term care claims that insurance companies process usually start off with home care. There's a lot of great facilities, but nobody's racing into a facility if they could be at home. You mentioned $3,800 is probably a good expectation to start for receiving home care here in San Diego, and I would say it could only go up from there. I have interacted with people and provided insurance to people who many years later needed to be in facilities, and here in San Diego, and it's not even exclusive to San Diego, I have people who pay, you know, $10,000 or $12,000 a month to be in a facility.
Wow.
Yeah, and some of that's because, one, they're nice places, but what I've noticed is that it's really tied to the type of care somebody needs. So in my experience, if you need $10,000 of care in a facility, maybe the really nice places are $12,000. In other words, the nicest place is not necessarily twice as much. It might only be a little bit more, because the real cost, the challenge of long-term care is you're basically hiring your own non-revenue generating employee to be on the payroll.
You know, Brian, I have a client whose mother has Alzheimer's, and they went through different facilities over the course of a 15-month period. I think they had her in three or four different care facilities, and she wasn't doing very well. The last place they had her in was costing them over $6,000 a month. This was in Arizona, where obviously it's probably cheaper than California. And then what they did, basically, they didn't have the money to maintain that. The last place she was at, it was a very nice facility. It was a one-bedroom apartment with a walk-in closet, a little kitchen, and a balcony, and they had all the kind of facilities that you would expect. But she wasn't doing very well mentally and physically. And the other thing is, the family was running out of funds to, you know, you're talking about $6,000 a month. It's over $70,000 a year. There just wasn't the income there. So the mother's living with one of the sons, and they have sort of this home care that they've gone to that's $3,200 a month versus the $6,200 or $6,400 a month. Do you see that, where sometimes one spouse, let's say a sole surviving spouse, goes into facility, but all of a sudden the funds start running out and the family says, what do we do next?
It's a great question, Jim. And again, getting back to how personalized anybody's long-term care experience is, it's important, or at least helpful, for the families to have these conversations as parents get older on what the plan would be. If you were to ask anybody, oftentimes if I'm being invited to speak with somebody about how to build a plan for long-term care that may or may not include long-term care insurance, the first thing I do is ask them, have you ever known somebody who's received care? If that person's 55 or older, the answer is rarely no. And if I just ask, have you ever known somebody who's needed to get cared for in a facility or at home, they often say yes, and they will tell a very personal story of a family member. And if they don't have one, they'll talk about their brother-in-law's mother. And they always go to the worst part of the story first, which is different for everybody, right? Some people talk about how expensive it is, very similar to the example you just shared, or how we got the best care we could for mom, but the problem is we didn't know how long mom would last. And the example you just referenced obviously shows that, especially the cognitive impairments, Alzheimer's, dementia, ultimately those will be terminal diseases, but it takes a long time. So there's a long period of time you want to plan for when somebody has Alzheimer's. But back to your question, is one that I've spoken to people who said, you know, boy, we got good care for mom, but I'll tell you, you know, they almost did the opposite. We kind of skimped on her care. We were very, very frugal. Boy, if we had known that she was going to be gone in 11 months, we would have gotten way better care. You know, so that's kind of the opposite of the example you just referenced. But that being said, it's very difficult to know how expensive the care will be, what family members are going to play a role, which ones won't. And ultimately, there's really no way to nail down every little detail prior to it happening. Back to your example, it's a tough one, right? So that $6,000 a month in care that you just referenced, it sounds like a really nice facility. Who wouldn't want that for themselves, and who wouldn't want that for a loved one? But then you start realizing, hey, this person might live a long time and different decisions have to be made. One of the considerations to keep in mind is obviously how much money somebody has allocated either for long-term care or any assets at all. In the example you just brought up, I'm assuming that maybe the very nice facility was not a Medi-Cal or Medicaid approved facility, which does not have to mean a bad facility. There's a lot of great facilities that will take, you know, state programs like Medi-Cal and Medicaid. The challenge is, and this comes to mind with the example you just mentioned since they moved that woman out, is that you really can't show up to the nicer facilities that will accept Medi-Cal in California or Medicaid elsewhere in the country. It's very difficult to get into those facilities with no assets whatsoever. So even though they will accept, let's say, Medicaid, they want to know they're going to get paid for some period of time from your own assets and not have to deal with the state. And typically the way those work is, hey, yes, we accept Medicaid. It looks like you have $100,000 or $200,000 in assets that we can count on being paid. And once that runs out, we understand we will have to accept Medicaid and they would not be able to kick you out. I just bring that up because if people just think, well, I'll just make sure I'm broke by the time I need long-term care, you want to have options to have the better Medicaid facilities is my point. And the only way to get into those is to have some assets so that you can start off paying for your care, either with assets or insurance. It's difficult to get into the nicer places showing up with no assets on day one.
Brian, isn't one of the real risks for many retirees is, let's say both spouses are living, it's when one spouse needs to go into a long-term care facility, because what you're doing then is you're doubling the cost of your household. Let's say a couple living together has monthly expenses of $5,000 a month, and all of a sudden now one spouse develops dementia, develops Alzheimer's, and has to go into a long-term care facility. Now you have the cost of the long-term care facility that you have to pay for. In the case of my client, their mother in the facility that they finally brought her out of was $6,000 a month. But let's say her husband was still living, then you're also maintaining two households. You're maintaining the cost of the long-term care facility plus the cost of the spouse that is living at home who is well. So now you have two household expenses. Isn't that a real risk?
It's a tremendous risk, and that's a fantastic point to bring up. When a long-term care event happens, and typical long-term care events, if it's due to a physical impairment, last about 3 years. If it's a cognitive impairment, Alzheimer's, dementia, those can run about 8 years. You know, it's not like the world stops on the day that you need long-term care. To your point, a married couple, like you said, if their household costs $5,000 a month to run, if you remove one of those spouses, it's very likely that a large part of that $5,000 is a fixed cost that is just required for that household to exist, whether there's 1, 2, 3, or 12 people in that house. So to your point, maybe the variable cost of that household could go down by a couple hundred or maybe $1,000 a month because maybe that person doesn't use as many utilities or groceries or things like that. So that's $1,000 to maybe reallocate towards the cost of that person's care elsewhere, but that still leaves, to your point, the remaining healthier spouse still needs a place to live, and maybe it still costs that person pretty close to the $5,000 that it cost with two people. You know, even if it was $4,000, so it would be $4,000 a month to keep the healthy spouse in that home, and let's say that person got the same type of care as the person you mentioned a moment ago, and that care costs $6,000. So now you've literally doubled the cost of a monthly existence for a married couple. So that would put a lot of pressure on most people's household finances and portfolio if the cost to run their household doubled in 1 month.
One situation I've seen, and especially with some of my clients who are more affluent, they sell their house and they choose to go into a retirement home. And the retirement home has a package. It's a set cost. It's probably more expensive than, let's say, when they were just living in their own home. But the advantage is if one spouse ends up needing care, that spouse can go into the other side of the facility where they get the care that they need, and the other spouse still stays in the same place so they can visit. So this is one option I've seen with my more affluent clients have chosen. What about that as an option if you can afford it?
I've heard great things about those. I mean, what I've seen a lot of in the long-term care industry is it could be almost a, you know, campus or facility or property, you know, that a lot of them are very nice, where you might go from needing assisted living, which means you're pretty self-sufficient in a lot of different areas of your life, which would be maybe it's not even, you know, medical or health care, but you do need some oversight. And different people need different things at different times, to your point. And what's nice is you can progress to, you know, a nursing facility or a skilled nursing facility, and literally your mailing address will not change, yet rather than move from one city to another each time that you need different types of care, you can really kind of contract with one company who's going to cater to you and your spouse's needs and keep you close by in a nice lifestyle. Those options are fantastic, I think. I do know, like you said, there are usually more considerations for more affluent clients. I would always advise somebody who has gone to one of those presentations. I find that people that come out of them usually wind up being pretty interested in that. I just always suggest somebody come back to their financial advisor to get just a fresh set of eyeballs. It can be a fantastic plan for people, and a lot of long-term care decisions become pretty emotional, so it's always helpful to have a fresh set of eyeballs to, you know, look upon an opportunity like that, because I do understand that they can be very expensive, and they're probably very nice. There's questions I think people would want to ask. Well, what happens if one spouse passes away shortly? What if both do? You know, is there any residual value to this investment. There's a lot of different structures. It's always worth it to look into it and then find out what you think you're interested in and come back to a financial advisor to get some objective advice on whether that makes sense.
So let's assume, Brian, that you're in a situation where you know that your parents lived long lives. They lived into their late 80s and 90s. You know that, for example, maybe Alzheimer's or dementia runs into the family. When's the most ideal time to buy something like long-term care insurance? Because we know as we age, statistically, it's just like buying life insurance. The older you are, the more it's going to cost you to buy life insurance. Likewise with long-term care. The older you are, the closer the probability is the insurance company is going to have to pay. So when do you buy it? Do you buy it in your 50s, your early 60s? When is the ideal time to think about long-term care insurance?
It's a great question, Jim. On paper, the safest answer would be the sooner the better, right? That being said, there's not as many people in their 30s or 40s who are worried about, you know, funding kids' colleges and paying for weddings and things like that, who typically find that funding a long-term care plan is a priority. I mean, if I was speaking to a married couple who's 55, their parents are usually 80, and you know, a married couple's put on this earth by four people who are now age 80. Very often, one of those four people has had some experience at long-term care. So I find that the appetite or the urgency for people to not just be open to discussing long-term care insurance, but want to hear about it, really starts at age 55. I would say way more people at 50 or above start considering long-term care insurance than they do 49 and below. So that being said, you really don't have a very long window to make these decisions. The, you know, once you hit 65, there are still options out there, but I would say the options really start dwindling. I always say there's really about three different ways to tackle this long-term care plan. Number one would be a traditional long-term care policy. And a lot of people I speak to have investigated those on their own. If somebody's familiar with a long-term care policy, they're probably thinking about a traditional long-term care policy. Number two would be not buying any insurance. We call that self-insuring. And for people who've been good savers, I do not villainize that as an option. It is a viable one. And then number three is something called a hybrid long-term care policy that really does a little bit of, number one, traditional long-term care, and number two, feels like self-insuring. Traditional long-term care, which is the first option, is going to look and feel like term life insurance or your car insurance. You're going to pay a monthly premium every year for the rest of your life, and that's not good or bad, just is what it is. For most people these days, even at age 55, you could easily pay, you know, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 a year for a married couple to have a traditional long-term care policy. And if you need long-term care, they'll pay the benefits and you will have hedged that risk quite well. The challenge I hear, or the feedback I get from people who look at traditional long-term care policies, and a lot of this depends on the amount of assets they have, is, you know, you're going to pay that premium for the rest of your life. Nobody's sure if you're going to need it or not, which is always a consideration with any type of insurance. None of us are sure we're going to have a car accident, but we pay for car insurance. And for long-term care, you'll pay long-term care insurance premiums. And some people need long-term care and some people don't. But it is possible that you could go your whole life, pay into a couple thousand dollars a year, and never need long-term care. And with traditional long-term care, if you were to pass away without using it, there's no death benefit. There might be a benefit, a long-term care benefit that passes to a surviving spouse, but if you didn't use it, you kind of lose it, is the trade-off. And it's just something worth considering. It doesn't mean it's bad. The other thing I like to let people know about with traditional long-term care is the fact that the premiums can, have been, are, and will continue to increase every few years. The insurance company is allowed to do that. And often it's in pretty decent double-digit percentage increases every few years. So as an example, maybe you're paying, you know, $4,000 a year for a total benefit for you and your spouse to use for long-term care of $300,000. You know, you feel like you have this risk hedge, so you're paying $4,000 a year, and 5 years into the policy, they send you a letter, and they'll say, hey, you know, in order to keep the same benefits, you need to pay $5,000 a year to keep your $300,000 in benefits. So the cost of maintaining that policy can increase over time. And I would always set expectations with people. And there's other costs. Car insurance goes up over time as well. There's other costs that go up, but traditional long-term care insurance policy premiums are not fixed. I would set the expectation that it will become a bit more expensive over time to maintain those same benefits. So that's option number one, is traditional long-term care. Lifetime premiums, if you don't use it, you could lose it, and the premiums can go up, but it is typically the least expensive way to cover long-term care insurance. And option number two would be to self-insure. And I'm maybe making some generalizations here, but your listeners are probably, by and large, good savers. And people who are good savers do not have to buy insurance to hedge every bit of risk that a guy wearing a necktie like me and maybe you today, Jim, can help them identify. One of the nice things about being a good saver is that, you know, if you have some assets, you can afford to retain some of your risk. So what would self-insuring look like? The biggest question I always like to ask people, Jim, if we're going to consider not buying long-term care insurance, is this. If you needed care tomorrow, which assets would you liquidate first? And I let people ponder that for a moment, and then I usually answer the question for them. I don't care if you have $100 in the bank or $100 million in the bank. Everybody has an aggressive part of their portfolio and a more conservative part. As we pointed out, you know, where long-term care could double your household costs if one spouse needed it and one didn't, you know, $5,000 a month to live could turn into $10,000 a month to cover one spouse at their home and one in a facility. Basically, if you were going to self-insure, you would just be thinking, if I have $500,000 saved, boy, if I needed care tomorrow, here's the first $100,000 I would liquidate. It's probably going to be the safest part of somebody's portfolio. It may not be cash, Jim, but it might feel a lot like cash. It's something that you can liquidate quickly. You don't have to worry about generating a big tax bill. You don't have to worry about selling it at a particular time in the market. You know, if it's going to look and feel like cash, CD, money market, that sort of thing. So if you were to think about self-insuring really as three buckets, let's just say we said, okay, here's the first $100,000 in our portfolio we would sell. And let's just think of that same $100,000 being used one of three ways. A lot of times you're not even moving the money. It's just already sitting in something safe. And you say, boy, if I change my mind, here's the $100,000 we'd use for long-term care, but if I change my mind, I could liquidate this whole thing and have $100,000 in cash tomorrow. So let's just say long-term care, if they needed to liquidate the money, you could liquidate it. Number two, you could set aside that $100,000 for long-term care and never need it, in which case that you would pass away one day and your family would inherit the $100,000 that you set aside and never needed for long-term care. And then bucket number three would be using it for long-term care. You set aside $100,000 and surprise, surprise, if you need long-term care, there's $100,000 there. So really, whether you decide to self-insure, say this is the safest $100,000 I have, whether you choose to liquidate it, leave it as a legacy because you didn't need long-term care, or use it for long-term care, $100 is worth $100, right? So self-insuring can be a great option because no insurance company will ever ask you for more money by way of rising premiums because you didn't buy insurance. You're pretty much acting as your own insurance company. If you don't need long-term care, your family gets every dollar you set aside for long-term care and didn't need. And if you needed long-term care, you wisely, you know, had a plan and had $100,000 allocated. So that would be option number two. Option number three would feel like a hybrid long-term care policy. And it looks and feels a lot like self-insuring. So again, let's just assume that in the self-insuring example, we had $100,000 sitting in a money market account or a CD. You can take the same $100,000 that we already need to agree that you would sell first if you needed long-term care, and we park that same $100,000 in an insurance policy. You put in $100,000, and it actually feels very similar to self-insuring. Number one, the $100,000 goes in. It becomes a cash value in the insurance policy. Usually, these policies are mostly liquid immediately and fully liquid after a few years. So if you put in $100,000, you know, maybe after 5 years, you could liquidate $100,000, not unlike a five-year CD, right? So that would be the liquidity option, kind of similar to self-insuring. You know, whatever you put in, you could pull out. Number two, same situation. You could allocate $100,000 for long-term care, not need it, and pass away. And then your family would get every bit of the $100,000 that you set aside. some of these insurance policies will pay a little bit more than the $100,000 you put in to replace any lost yield that maybe a CD would have earned for your family over that time. So again, whether you self-insure or use one of these policies, if you put in $100,000, you could withdraw $100,000. If you pass away and never need long-term care, both self-insuring and these hybrid policies would pay your family back at least the $100,000 you put into it. But the big difference, Jim, is what about if you need long-term care? And that's the whole reason for the conversation, is that that same $100,000 that you had said, this is what I'll liquidate first, and when this runs out, I'll liquidate more money from my portfolio. These hybrid policies really help stretch the value of that investment. So if the money's sitting in one of these policies when you decide you need long-term care, the $100,000 is not worth $100,000 for long-term care. It might be worth $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 of a total pool of tax-free dollars that you can spend on your own care. So what's nice about that for people who have the assets to even consider self-insuring, you can basically park that same money, you know, a very safe insurance policy. The liquidity trade-offs are pretty similar. The legacy trade-offs are pretty similar. But you're really getting tax-free leverage where the $100,000 might be worth three or four times as much.
So in summing up, Brian, it seems to me like there's three viable options here. And part of it is going to depend on a person's ability to pay their resources. One would be to take out a long-term care policy, knowing that you're going to pay that probably the rest of your life, and over time those premiums can go up. But let's say if you took it out in your early 50s when it's affordable, might be an option. Option number two is just simply to allocate part of your budget in self-insure. So for Larry Lots of Bucks, who has the money, he can say, you know what, I'm going to take 10% of my investment portfolio, I'm going to live off it, but if I need it, or either one of us needs it, it's going to be there for long-term care. And then the third option is a hybrid, like a life insurance policy, that if you never need long-term care, the life insurance policy is paid to the estate and heirs, or if you need it, it's converted into a long-term care policy that could be worth 2 to 3 times the policy itself. What would you recommend somebody do? In other words, to look at those three options, I assume that you're going to have to give this some kind of thought or some kind of planning, either working with somebody like yourself or an advisor to sit down and decide, based on a person's income, their budget, and assets, which one of these three works best.
Yes, and I think the most helpful advice I would give to anybody listening would be to use this conversation as a personal conversation starter and interact with a financial advisor who could guide them through these options in a little bit more of a personalized manner than we've been able to do here. What I would say, without making blanket assumptions, is that if somebody doesn't have as much money as they maybe hoped to by 55 or 65, that would probably make a traditional long-term care policy a bit more appealing, because you know, you just need to part with a couple $1,000 premium each year. And again, down the road, if you do need long-term care and a facility says, how are we going to get paid, and you can show this long-term care policy document, that may heavily weigh in your favor on getting into the type of facility that you'd like. And then the other side of the coin would be, like you said, Larry Lots of Bucks. If somebody has been, you know, a good saver and maybe looked at traditional long-term care and thought, boy, I didn't get to have this amount of money saved by paying for a lot of things that I didn't get use out of, that person, their first inclination might say, well, should I buy long-term care insurance at all? The absence of buying it really by default means you're a self-insurer. So if somebody's considering self-insuring or naturally inclined to consider self-insuring, I would just advise that they interact with a Poplava, you know, financial advisor to decide what are the trade-offs of self-insuring and taking all that risk on your own shoulders versus maybe having the hybrid long-term care policy that will really look and feel a lot like the money in the bank as it is now. It's just that it might be worth, like you said, you know, 2, 3, 4, sometimes 5 times their investment to be able to use long-term care. So really option number three is, it's really a better way to self-insure. The line in the sand is really, would you find a couple $1,000s a year in premium more palatable, or just a reallocation of the safest 10% of your existing portfolio? And I think somebody might put some thought into that and then maybe bring those conclusions to a financial advisor to personalize the conversation to them.
Well, listen, Brian, those are some very good thoughts. The real key point here is, if you're listening to this broadcast, you're in retirement, nearing retirement, is to give these considerations some thought, because with some careful planning, there are plenty of options to deal with this issue. Just bear in mind, if you look at your own health, if you look at the history of your own family, and you have, for example, parents that lived into their late 80s or some in their 90s, and your own health is pretty good, chances are, odds are very good that one of either spouse could end up in a long-term care facility, or even worse, both of you. Brian, as we close, if our listeners would like to find out more about long-term care insurance and they would like to contact you, how could they do so, please?
My phone number is 619-885-0556. My email address is Brian, B-R-I-A-N, dot MacArthur, MCARTHUR, at Bridlewood, Bridlewood, insurance.com. And or I could be invited in to chat about this topic. If folks wanted to reach out to you folks at Poplava, they could start by calling you, and I'd be happy to be invited in to help guide somebody through that conversation.
Well, listen, Brian, I want to thank you for joining us on the program. Once again, this is a very important issue, is one of the main reasons we see a lot of people going broke. There was a recent study. One out of six people that enter into retirement could end up broke. And usually when you examine, it ends up being medical expenses. Brian, thanks for joining us on the program.
Thank you so much, Jim. My pleasure.
You know, it's interesting here, because when you realize, if you do plan things, Jim, you do have some options, but the real option you don't want to opt for is waiting until everything is on your doorstep and there you are. You know, you don't have many options at that point.
Well, you know, we've talked about this program. In fact, on this week's program, we talked about how three things are related. Longevity relates to higher medical expenses and also to inflation risk. In a lot of the cases where, you know, the statistics show one out of six retirees will end up broke, most of it is, John, as a result of medical expenses, which you incur in the latter stages of your life. And as the example I gave of my client, whose mother, they just did not have the assets or the provision to account for long-term care. And I think maybe one of the reasons is the mother has had the longest longevity of any of her siblings. And so, you know, they tried it at first, but basically when they found a halfway decent home, they simply couldn't afford it. Now she's living with one of her children and having home care, which is the only way they were able to afford it. So with proper planning, as Brian was talking about here, there are several options that are available. So do yourself a favor. If you're looking at retiring in the next 10 years, or you recently retired, you have issues of longevity that run into your family, or maybe you have a history of dementia and Alzheimer's in your family, do yourself a favor. Get with an advisor and do some planning. It could be the best decision that you will make, because you don't want to end up like one of my clients, where they had to deal with the situation where they simply couldn't afford to take care of their mother. Anyway, on behalf of John Leffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries, or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.